Thank you so much to Happy Mammoth for sponsoring this episode of Making Moves.
I don't know about you guys, but every time I'm PMSing, I feel beyond off. Like, something is not right when I'm PMSing. And ever since I started Hormone Harmony, I swear it has changed my life.
Like, I'm not even kidding you. Before I experienced Hormone Harmony, I was getting the most insane cravings, bloating, feeling super off randomly, and even sometimes not getting good quality sleep. And y'all know how important sleep is to me. Like, it is my number one thing. So I wanted to take the reins on my health, specifically my hormone health. And that's why I started taking Hormone Harmony.
Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. There are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony.
If you don't know what Hormone Harmony is, let me just tell you. It supports hormonal balance and regulation, supports cortisol, estrogen, improves sleep quality, reduces occasional bloating and gas. It even can relieve mood swings. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code MOVES at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code MOVES, M-O-V-E-S, code MOVES, for 15% off today.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
No, I was like fully, I was like, if I'm in this, then I'm going to go all the way. And then so eventually, like, you know, we started making out, and then, ooh, it's about to get juicy in here.
Hey guys, welcome back to TK's Juicy Pod. I am here today with the one and only Zach Peter.
Hello.
So I was literally stalking you today, as us podcast hosts do,
And I was obsessed, first of all, with your website. It's like so professional. I have actually never seen anyone have such a great website.
Thank you.
I mean, literally, it's so easy to book you.
All myself.
You killed it.
I Googled like how to do it.
If anyone needs like advice on like how to make a website and like how to be marketable to people, I highly suggest looking at yours. I'm not kidding.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. You want to plug it?
Yeah. JustPlainZach.com.
Yeah. I mean, honestly. And how did you make it?
Squarespace.
Okay. Love that.
Like it's like a template and then I'm like, okay, this works and let's put a photo here and type my name. Okay. And yeah. I did it.
Literally, I was like, I felt like I had an idea of what you were like. And then I went to your website and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I was like, I know so much now. So I was like, this is very easy for me.
It is all out there.
So yeah, on your website and your Instagram bio and stuff, it says TV host, mm-hmm. podcaster, writer, and pop culture junkie, Zach Peter. Okay, so we're going to pause the episode really quickly so I can talk about literally one of my favorite things on the planet, Anchor. So if you haven't heard about Anchor before, it's basically the easiest way to make a podcast, period. Let me just explain to you what they have. First of all, it's free, which like nothing's free anymore. So I feel like that's already your number one winner. Second of all, there's like all these different creation tools on the platform where you can make your own podcast and like you can record and edit it right from your phone or your computer, which is like crazy because you don't need all this fancy equipment. And like I said, it's free. So you're saving money that way too. And then my personal favorite thing about Anchor and like the main reason why I use it is because Anchor will literally distribute your podcast for you. So it can be heard on all different platforms that like basically any podcast can be distributed. So it can be heard through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and many, many more. So all you do is submit your podcast link and they literally distribute it everywhere for you, which is incredible. And overall, it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So it's super easy. I can't recommend it enough. I personally use this every week and I just love it so much. I recommend it to every one of my friends that wants to start a podcast. Even my brother uses it. So it's very user-friendly and I definitely recommend. So be sure to download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. So don't miss your opportunity to make an awesome podcast and download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now let's get back into the episode. Hope you're enjoying it so far. Mwah. What would you say is your main thing?
Now I'm at a place where I am comfortable calling myself a writer and a podcaster. Like those are my two things.
Got you.
I'm a writer podcaster.
And you have two podcasts, I noticed. Because I knew about the No Filter one, but the other one's adulting?
Yes. So one's hashtag No Filter with Zach Peter, and that's where we do pop culture news and celebrity interviews.
Yes.
You were on the show.
That's
the,
everyone go listen to our episode.
And then the other one is called hashtag adulting life hacks to get your shit together. Mm-hmm. So that one we bring on like experts and like thought leaders and like pick their brains about like how to get our shit together. We've had everyone from Jillian Michaels to Dr. Drew to Bulletproof's Dave Asprey. So yeah, we've had
Shut up.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love Dave Asprey.
He's so sweet.
Oh my God, I have so much to talk to you about. Okay, how'd you get him on the show?
I actually knew him through...
My mom's obsessed with him. She literally...
I love him. I ended up connecting with his Bulletproof company through my writing that I do for Pop Sugar, and then I like to see what they would most be interested. Do you have the book coming out that they would rather promote on a podcast, or do they need an article about launch that they're doing?
I
build the relationship from there.
Copy that. So smart. Speaking of Pop Sugar, you wrote this article about podcasters or up and coming podcasts or whatever. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how you found me and how we connected and stuff?
Yeah. So Pop Sugar is we want to do a bunch of podcast roundups. And originally it was one or two that they, were thinking of doing. And I was I'm down. I'll do it. And I really wanted to do it because I know how much it would mean to me if somebody had featured one of my podcasts on a publication like Pop Sugar. And I was I know so many good podcasts. I listen to so many good shows that I wanted to be able to spread the love.
Yeah.
And so I took on like one or two of the roundups and they did really well. So they had me continue to do more of them. And then I was like, let's do one on like, you know, people that are maybe have a smaller social media influence. They don't have like 5 million followers or like 9 million. Yeah. They're not like a Joey Graceffa or yeah. Grace Helbig, but they're still, you know, very impactful on social media that also have podcasts. And they're like, oh my God, we love the idea.
Yeah.
And so I continued to dig more into doing research into different influencers. Uh-huh. And then I found your Instagram and yeah. I loved your polls. And I was like, this is such a fun concept.
You're
and then
so
I started
fun.
Listening to the podcast. Yeah.
Whose other podcast or whatever did you find mine through?
I think it was through Remy Cruz and Alicia.
And Alicia's, the Pretty Basic.
Yeah.
Okay, got you. Which is funny because I work for Alicia.
Yeah.
So you write for Pop Sugar.
Mm-hmm. I'm
which
a contributor.
Is so epic. So what does that mean?
So I'm a contributor, so I can come in and pitch them ideas. Sometimes they give me ideas, or sometimes they put out assignments for the contributors and we can like take them on a first come, first serve basis. So I'm not like a full-time employee. I'm more of just like an independent contractor that kind of dips in and out.
When a writer comes in, is it like you, like for me, as like if I were to film something mm-hmm. and for the day, I would probably get paid by the day or like yeah. have a rate. Do you like a rate that you give them for per article or
yeah.
how does that work?
So as a contributor, I get a rate per article.
Okay, per article.
And it normally depends on the amount of work that it would take to do.
To
like if
in.
It's an interview or if it's like an event coverage, like that's going to be a little more than, you know, something that's like a personal essay.
Got it. Okay, cool. So you started writing about all these podcasts, which I feel like that article did well. I don't
it
know
really
about on
did.
Your end, but like on my end, I like saw it in all my friends' Instagram yeah. stories and stuff.
No, people love it. I mean, and to me, like, look, my podcasts aren't featured on any of the articles. And like, that would be a little funky of me to put my own podcast in, you know, a coverage article like that. But like, for me, I was just like, I really just want to spread the love in a way. Like I have the opportunity to like share other people. And like, I'm not looking for anything other than hopefully to build connections with them. Like
I love
did.
That. No, and literally 5 seconds after I saw that article, yeah. I was like, who is this guy? I want him on my podcast.
I've been hustling since I was like 15 years old. I mean, younger than that, since like 7 years old. And I was like selling, you know, bootleg CDs to kids at school.
Yeah, I love it.
But like, yeah, I've always been a hustler. I always like to just spread the love any chance I can.
So how did you find the other podcasts too?
Really just going on, going to the podcast that I already listen to regularly.
Uh-huh.
And then on iTunes, they have like the
requested.
The recommended
it.
Ones. And then I just kept listening and, you know, building over the summer, just listening to different shows and building my list.
Yeah. I mean, it was such a good article. I was literally shook. I was literally like, wait, I'm on this? How and why? And it was so cool because obviously like a bunch of my friends, like Gals on the Go,
yeah.
I'm like best friends with Brooke and Danielle, Ashley and Taryn from
yeah.
Unsolicited, and then Remy and Alicia from Pretty Basic, which I'm sure there was even more that I'm missing, but it was so cool. I loved it. So speaking of podcasts, who are your favorite podcasts to listen to?
Currently my favorite is The Skinny Confidential.
Same.
That's my favorite.
Same.
Because I always learn so much from their
conversations. It's like cheeky, fun, juicy, but also you learn so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a nice mix, I feel like, for people like us when mm-hmm. I don't want to listen to someone like talking to a wall giving me information.
Yeah, yeah,
I want
yeah.
it to be fun and entertaining, which I feel like they do such a good job with. And
1,000%.
Didn't you have Lauren on your pod?
Yeah, I know Lauren. I've had her on both of my shows, actually. I had her on No Filter, and then I had her and Michael on Adulting.
So how'd you do that?
I think I just reached out via email.
Really?
And it took like months. And, you know, their team was like, oh, we don't know and we'll see. And then because I originally wanted to get both of them on, because I just think podcasting is such a great way to like network with people.
It
and
is.
Meet people and like just like pick people's brain. And they even talk about it on their podcast. Like Mike was always saying, like, don't ask me to go for coffee because that's such a, you know, not efficient use of either of our time. But like, you know, ask them to do your podcast or ask them to interview them for a website or whatever leverage you have that you can, whatever value you have that you can offer them, you know, lead with that. And you're more likely to get their attention.
Yes. Love that. So actually I want to touch base and pause on like my notes for a second and talk about the don't take people for coffee thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have a very strong opinion about
mm-hmm.
this. So basically for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, actually the Skinny Confidential had a whole, well, the him and her show. I know I listened to a podcast following that one and it was with Ryan Holiday and they said that they kind of got blasted for it.
Yeah.
And people were like, wait, why the heck would you say that? Because they were saying never ask someone just to get coffee because it's a waste of time. But also in LA, I feel like it's kind of like the culture to like meet people via coffee. So what are your thoughts on that? And do you understand where they're coming from? I would love to know, because I feel like, especially when you're younger and like you're trying to make it in a way, it's like, how do you network with these people?
No, absolutely. I understand where they're coming from and I agree with them to like an 80% degree.
Because, I would agree with that.
Because I understand how somebody that's really busy doesn't necessarily have time to like go somewhere to have coffee with you. That's why I've always leveraged like my podcast or something that, like they said, you need to give the other person some sort of value other than, because they're basically, even though it's free, even though you're buying them a coffee, like I can buy my own fucking coffee. You have to give them a reason to actually invest in that time, because that time is so much more valuable than the expense that they would pay for the coffee. And they still have to take time out of their day and drive over to the coffee shop and sit with you and go through all the basic small talk and all that BS, you know?
Yeah. So if you don't get coffee and you don't have a podcast, how the heck do you get connected? How do you provide value for them?
I mean, I think it's unique to every person, you know? I mean, for me, I have two podcasts with two very different areas of focus. Adulting is obviously, you know, lifestyle and personal development. And then No Filter is a lot more celebrity pop culture based. And then, you know, and then I have like Pop Sugar. Like Pop Sugar has been a great way for me to connect with people as well. Because I can, you know, I can write. That's how I got like Dr. Mark Hyman to come on my shows. I featured his book on Pop Sugar and it built the connection from there. So I think you just really have to look at everything that you have on the table and be like, you know, what can I offer? Everybody has something to offer. You just have to get creative with how to do that. Maybe it's a blog. Maybe it's your Instagram that's really popular. Maybe you're like, hey, can you do a call in on my Instagram? And we do an Instagram Q&A live for 15 minutes.
Got it.
And that fosters that connection.
Completely agree. What are your thoughts on like if someone asks you to get coffee? Like, are you down or like, does it depend on the person?
No, I mean, I think it depends. I just actually just went and grabbed coffee with somebody yesterday.
Okay.
Somebody on Instagram, they're like, I'm going to be in Los Angeles. I would love to meet with you for like 30 minutes to pick your brain. And I did. And I met this woman and we had a really great conversation and it was actually really nice. I mean, it did take a lot of time out of my day that I understand it's not the most time efficient, but I mean, it really just depends on the person for me. I'm happy to do it, but you have to give me like a really good reason as to why we're going to meet.
You know? I guess it just hit home with me a little bit because I get it. I totally get it. And like, even sometimes when people ask me for coffee, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to, or I don't have time or whatever. Yeah. But it's also crazy because I would not have my job right now had I not gotten coffee with someone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You have such a strong hustle that you recognize that hustle in return, where you can sense based off of the email, based off of the approach, based off of how they reached out to you, whether or not they're serious or they're kind like, I just kind of want to hang out for an hour and get to know you. Because I've done that too.
Where
it's more of like, hey, I kind of have an idea. Can you meet me? And I'll go. And then I'm like, this was such a waste of time. Like, you don't have any idea. You know, and that was really what they said. They're like, well, I don't really know. I just thought, you know, I would kind of give you this idea and see what you think about it. And I'm like, you know.
So you think it's about the approach, the email, the initial reaching out.
It's how you
agree.
It. Yeah.
It's kind of like relationships. Like, you know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I love this quote. Someone said, I forget, my friend Remy, actually. Mm-hmm. She told me, she was like, if a guy likes you, you'll know. If he doesn't like you, you'll be confused.
Yeah.
And like, it's just all via it's texting. So like, you know.
You know
what I mean?
You just convinced yourself of something else.
I'm like, well, he said he thought I was cute once. Like, that does not mean he likes me.
But like, you fixate on that one thing that
he said.
That
well, he
one
said
time.
It on December 3rd at 3:30.
Thank you so much to Apartments.com for sponsoring this episode of Making Moves. Apartments.com believes a dishwasher does more than just clean plates. It turns your whole place into a time machine by turning the time you would have spent washing dishes into extra time for you. That could mean more time to read, more time to knit, or more time to contemplate the vastness of time itself. With Apartments.com, finding somewhere to live with an elusive dishwashing/time-expanding device is easy. Apartments.com hosts the most rental listings with over 1 million available units. And with comprehensive search tools and instant alerts, you never have to worry about missing out on the perfect place. To find whatever you're searching for and more, visit Apartments.com, the place to find a place.
The one thing that has kept me sane throughout the 75 Hard Challenge, and more importantly, has kept me hydrated the most,
is Liquid IV. Y'all, when I tell you, I literally crave Liquid IV. Like, the lemon lime flavor lives rent-free in my head. First of all, it just always quenches my thirst, but it is perfectly sour and has that tangy taste to it, and it's just so good. Like, a nice, cold, crisp glass of Liquid IV. Oh my gosh. Mwah! Sounds so good. Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drinks, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. So I actually just taste tested all of the flavors for you guys. The pear, the white peach, the green grape, and the lemon lime. And I have to tell you, I still think lemon lime is my favorite. But my second favorite is green grape. And then my third favorite, believe it or not, is pear. I'm actually shocked by how much I like pear. And then in 4th place for me was the white peach. My favorite thing about Liquid IV is how convenient it is, especially because I am always on the go. I am booked and busy, and I'm sure you guys are too. So being able to pack it so easily in a purse or a carry-on or whatever the case is, like my work bag, I always have a Liquid IV in there because throughout my day, I get so thirsty and nothing truly satisfies my thirst craving other than a Liquid IV. Like, it is so good. I literally want to make one right now. And listen, drinking water is great. Like, I've been drinking so much water while doing the 75 hard challenge, but 1 stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates you way better than water alone. And I love it because I feel like it actually revives me. And the best part about it is that there's no artificial sweeteners and 0 sugar. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier, sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code TK at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop better hydration today using promo code TK at liquidiv.com.
So who are your favorite podcasts to listen to besides Skinny Confidential? Anyone else?
Oh, I like the Goop podcast.
Uh-huh.
I like Chelsea Handler's
Same.
Life Will Be the Death of Me podcast.
Yeah.
That's on here. I like the Skimmed from the Couch.
Okay.
That's a really good one.
So you like to learn.
I like to learn. I like to learn, and occasionally I like to laugh, so I'll do like a Heather McDonald podcast. Love Heather McDonald.
Yes. Who has been your favorite guest on your podcast?
I would say my favorite guest was, it was my 100th episode on No Filter, and I had Jenny McCarthy on the show. Mm-hmm. And I know Jenny McCarthy is a very controversial celebrity. A lot of people have very strong, she's like Gwyneth Paltrow. You have very strong feelings. Yeah. You either really like her or you really don't like her. I've worked with her for the past 10 years, and she's wow. been one of my greatest mentors.
Why have you worked with her for the last 10 years?
My brother has autism. She had an autism foundation that I found. They gave my family a grant, helped us afford a doctor and
wow.
get a supplement protocol together. And it was just a really great program that I was like, okay, I want to work for this foundation. I want to volunteer for this foundation, yes. whatever.
I know you're super involved yeah. with that. I was like literally reading yeah. your Wikipedia page. So that's amazing.
When I was 15, 16, I was like, can I come into the office and volunteer for my summer? And they're like, you're a high school kid and you want to come in and volunteer for your summer? Like, well, we can use the extra hands, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I did. And I remember I was like, can I just come every day of the week? And they're like, you're not in school. Why would you want to come in every day of the week?
Yeah.
Volunteer here.
Yeah.
And I did for the summer. And then eventually I started working for Jenny doing like small temp jobs, like an assistant to her assistant, promoting her book tours, stuff like that.
So she was very involved.
Very involved, just took an interest in me. And so I eventually started working for the foundation, worked my way all the way up, became executive director.
Wow.
And recently ended my term there. Yeah.
Wow. Good for you. Yeah. That is incredible.
So that was my favorite interview, which happened a couple years ago. It was our 100th episode on No Filter. And it was just because it was a chance for us to sit down and for me to like pick her brain in a different arena.
Different way. Got mm-hmm. it. Got it. And who's your dream guest?
Probably Gwyneth Paltrow.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I'm fascinated with what she's built with Goop and fascinated with the fact that like she takes on so much online criticism and people really hate her, but like she is just so strong in who she is despite all of that negativity that like I just have such a respect for that.
Why do you think people hate her so much?
I think because she, it's funny, I had her chief content officer on our show and she she said that, like, you know, Gwyneth is just a very polarizing figure where, you know, she's unapologetically herself. Yeah. And I think that intimidates people.
Got it.
I think it's the same reason, yeah, a lot of people don't like Jenny, because she is unapologetically herself. She shares what her opinions are. She shares what she thinks. She doesn't really, you
know. Can't please everyone.
You can't please everyone. And I think the people that try to please everyone are the ones that eventually, you know, fade out because they don't have a strong stance. They don't know who they are.
Yeah, that's incredible. Have you listened to the podcast with Gwyneth on Dax Shepherd's?
No.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Oh, Gwyneth or Chelsea Handler would be my other one. I'd love to have Chelsea.
I love Chelsea Handler. Actually, Chelsea was on Dax's too. Is that what you said?
I listened to that one.
Okay, listen to the one with Gwyneth. Also, Kate Hudson and her brother, Oliver Hudson, were just on it, which is so good. He has some really good ones. Also, like another one of my favorites is Busy Phillips on Dax Shepherd's podcast. Did you know that she dated Tom Hanks's son?
No.
Yes.
Colin Hanks.
Yes.
Wow.
Colin Hanks. And basically, when Tom Hanks was like in his prime, like she would like go over to her boyfriend's house, and that was Tom Hanks's house.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy? Can you imagine?
That's wild.
Yeah. So anyway, and she would be like on premiere, like red carpet, like with Colin Hanks, like just chilling, like for Tom Hanks's like big movie. It's so interesting. You have to listen to it. Anyway, what other magazines besides Pop Sugar have you written for / do you write for?
I've written for Men's Health. That one actually kind of broke my heart because it ended because the company went through a transition and they got bought out. So the editors that I was working for, some of them ended up leaving the company.
Got it.
So I kind of just ended up losing that because I was so excited when I got that. And I'd written my first article and it got published, got a ton of shit for it.
Really? Why?
Which understandably so. It was a hair gummy.
The vitamin?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Where I tested it out and then it was in the process of when I first bleached my hair to see if like my hair would stand up to the rough process of bleaching. And people were really upset because they're like, it's a gummy that's supposed to be for people that are losing their hair and you have a full head of hair. So like I understood. I understood, but I was like, whatever. So I did that article, which was great. And then I had written a second article where I had all these like great doctors and experts and we dive deep into the collagen craze. And that one never got published because that's when the transition happened.
Got you.
I missed that one. And then a lot of other smaller publications.
Okay. So growing up, were you always into writing? Like, did you love English class? Like, how did you get into becoming a writer?
When the idea of me writing my first book kind of came up, I was like, I can't write a book. I was 15 at the time. I was like, I can't write a book. I can't even write an essay and get an A.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was so bad at school, but I was just really good with words.
Yeah.
And I loved to talk.
Uh-huh.
And so it was really just because somebody said, like, you should write a book. Everyone reads books from like the moms that have kids with autism, but nobody understands the sibling perspective.
Yeah.
It's a unique perspective. Just sit down at a computer and write. And then my mom was like, yeah, why don't you do that? Like, just do it and see what happens. And then I started writing and really kind of fell in love with that. That was the first book that I actually read that where I realized like you don't have to be some major scholar to like
write a book.
Like you can have a personality and you can cuss in your books and you can be unfiltered and you can share really personal anecdotes and like be honest and real.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be
Lord
of the Flies.
Yeah,
Lord of the Flies. Like some iconic, you know.
That's great. I think it's so impressive that you have written four books.
Four books, yeah. Writing my fifth right now.
Wow. And you're so young.
26.
You're so young. That's insane. You wrote your first one at 15.
First one at 15.
And have they all been about autism?
No. So the first one was more of just like a compilation book. I had like other families in the community share their stories and their experiences with autism to kind of show like a full 360 view of what autism is. And so a lot of it was like me, you know, guiding the book, but I shared a lot of other stories in it. Second book was humor essays about my time as an activist and realizing like people are like batshit crazy in that community.
Yeah.
And then my third book, because this is when I was like doing stand-up for a couple of years, my third book was called When Life Hands You Lemons, Throw Them at People.
Oh,
and it was
a
book about like just kind of owning your inner crazy and you know, using it to build a career for yourself or to build, you know, to lead on your dreams. And then my fourth book was the one that was really like a memoir about autism and my brother. And that's where I got it. Really personal.
Obviously, autism is so near and dear to your heart. Why did you decide that you wanted to actually write a book work on it and like actually make it such a huge part of your life.
Yeah, I think my brother was diagnosed when I was about 11-ish.
Okay. And so you were kind of older.
Yeah, I was older. He was about 3 at the time. I was about 11. And then I just remember my mom took a really strong activist role and was like really, you know, trying to rally in the community and try to get him services. And I just saw her hustle to help him.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to be a part of this.
Got it.
You know, especially because it didn't seem like my aunt was also really helpful, but like it didn't really seem like everybody else was on board to like really go above and beyond.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to like jump in because I felt like, I think I felt a responsibility as the oldest.
Yeah.
To be like, I need to take care of him.
Uh-huh.
And then around the time that I was 15 and I just saw how much work my mom had done in the community, I was like, okay, I want to get involved.
Yeah.
Too. And then I hosted a fundraiser, which had a couple hundred people. It was really local here in Los Angeles, but we raised like $2,000.
I mean, yeah, and that's incredible.
I was 15 and I was like, I can raise money. Like, this is really cool. And I put this whole thing together. I got the LA Dodgers to come out and play ball with the kids.
Oh
like,
my God.
I got city council. Like, now I look back and I was like meeting with city council that's to get insane. Them to like cover the expenses for this event. But it was just because I had that brazen and that, you know,
that fire in you.
That fire. And I was also naive and dumb enough to believe that I could actually make an impact.
Yeah.
And I think you're innocent and naive enough at that age to really believe that you can make an impact
completely.
And change the world.
And nothing's intimidating.
Exactly. And I think that's, you know, what really led my fuel. But at the same time, it also came with a lot of harsh backlash from other people because there were like a lot of older people in that world. And this
Got
is
it.
Where I wrote my second book. There were a lot of older people in that world that I think maybe didn't have that same fire and same passion. So they were intimidated by the spitfire that was trying to, you know, that believed he could change the world at that age.
Got it. So how many siblings do you have?
I'm the oldest of 7. So my dad did not like to use birth control.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you're the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. This, everything makes sense to me now. Why, like, you're such a go-getter and stuff. So having your brother be diagnosed with autism, what was that like for you and your family?
It was interesting. Nobody really explained to me what autism was.
Like, all of a sudden one day you were like, your brother has autism, this is what it is, or what?
So it was interesting because I had so many siblings before my brother Ethan came along that I thought I knew. I like had this big brother thing down. I was like, I got this. Like,
yeah.
I'm a builds, you know, I need to get a paycheck for this because I'm doing so damn good. I need a raise. And by the time Ethan came along, he was responding very, you know, traditionally as the rest of them did. And then eventually, about when he was 18 months, he had like a really intense regression where he stopped talking, he stopped making eye contact, and he just like lost all of those skills that he had developed over the past several months.
That something that you knew? Or
it was something that I noticed, but I didn't understand.
Got it.
So the adults were having...
Because you're still very young.
Yeah, the adults were having a conversation about like milestones and maybe taking him to therapy and speech delay. To me, that was way over my head where I was just like, my brother's just suddenly lost interest in me. And he like, and I took it personal. I was like, he just has no interest in like, you know, I'm failing as a big brother because I was so good to all the rest of them. And now this one just wants nothing to do with me. He won't laugh when I try to play with him. He won't respond. He won't look me in the eye. And so I took it really personal.
Like not being responsive.
Correct. And then eventually once the diagnosis came, again, it was never really a conversation that was had with me. It was a word that I had heard and we would go to like therapy and take him to, you know, ABA and OT. And again, I didn't even know what those things meant. I just knew these are services he needed.
Yeah.
And then that's when I decided I really wanted to take on a much bigger role to be like, okay, I want to help him because I feel like this is my responsibility to take care of him.
Did everyone just kind of, I know you said your mom really jumped into caring and helping for him. Like explain to like people like me that I have no idea. I can't even imagine what that's like. Like what was that actually like for you?
I mean, it really shifted the family dynamic. And I think everybody responded and processed it very differently.
Okay.
I know my stepfather, who is Ethan's father, he, you know, he wasn't really involved, wasn't really engaged. I don't know. He just wasn't really there or present for it, which is, I think, another reason I felt such
absolutely.
A responsibility to step up. But no, it was really hard for the family, especially because my mother was doing all of this research. And, you know, she was like, okay, I researched, you know, gluten. And gluten just seems to be really hard on his body and maybe we should like try a gluten-free diet for him. And then my grandparents were very traditional. They're like, no, you can't put him on a diet. Like they just didn't understand it. And they're, and she was like, well, you know, maybe we should give him like fish oil supplements, you know, cause
trying to do
multivitamins. Yeah. She's like, I'm reading these things and these parents are seeing these results. And like, you know, I just want to try, I want to try this. And everyone was like, no, you're going to give him vitamins and you're going to, you know, take gluten away. You're going to deprive him of having fun. And it was just, it was a really tough time. And then I even had my uncle who was like, well, I researched that and that's not true. And it's all bogus and quackery. But it was like, but we were starting to implement these things and starting to see the results. And like, it was something and it was working, whether it was magic or quackery, whatever it was, it was working. And, you know, and that's another reason is I saw the pushback that my family was giving my mom, that I was like, no, she needs an ally in this and I need to jump into the ring and really help her. And I came in hardcore. I remember I got him like one of the best doctors in the country.
How'd you do that?
Well, through all of my work, I built so many connections over a couple of years.
That is incredible.
And it was the doctor that helped Jenny with her son. Okay, so here's another thing that I did, because you always have to think about like if we can't afford it, because like these doctors, some of them, because they don't accept insurance and they're specialty doctors, they cost like $500-$600 an hour.
Yeah.
Oh. You can't afford $500-$600. No. So I was like, okay, how am I going to, you know, figure out a way for us to pay for this? So I ended up talking to a film producer who I went to college with. And I was like, let's do a documentary and let's document all of this. And through that, I was able to get a lot of his treatments covered. I got him an infrared sauna. We redid his room, got it painted with non-toxic paint. We got him a whole new non-toxic bed, just because we were doing so much research in the documentary that was showing that, like, which now years later, we realize that, like, you know, food does play an impact on your body and your mental clarity. And you don't do paint with lead anymore. And when you sleep on a bed and it's off-gassing and it has chemicals coming out of it, like that is unhealthy for you. Yeah. Like all of these things that we learned that we explored in the documentary. And I was like, look, if we're going to do it, then let's do it and let's film all of it.
Wow.
And we did. And
so did you get a grant to film? Like, or were people like more willing to do things for free since you were filming it for a doc?
Because I had done, but they were willing to do it for free or through different sponsorships and partnership deals we had worked out.
And how old were you at the time of this?
At this point, I was 18, 19.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So do you think you had an extra fire underneath your butt because this was your brother and this was so close to home?
It was so personal and I just
and you needed to do anything you could. Oh my gosh.
The books, and it was hard because even a lot of people were like, you're doing books and you're doing a documentary, like you're now you're just capitalizing off of your brother. And they didn't realize that like I was doing all of this not necessarily for the attention for myself, but because this is what was gaining us access to the doctors, to the treatments, to afford all of this stuff. Like I knew like it was way out of reach for what we could financially do. Like I didn't make shit off of the documentary. If anything, I lost money off of so many projects and stuff that we did, but it was really just one, because I was, the main purpose was to help him. And then the second purpose was to then use our story to help other people.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible. What's your relationship now like with your brother?
It's different. It's changed a lot because he's gotten a lot older and I've also had, now he's like 18 and I've also had to become mindful of like, we at some point I had to be like, okay, we can't keep pushing our story and putting it out there because like he's getting older and I want to make sure we respect his privacy.
Yeah.
Especially because he like became a teenager and then like started going through puberty during filming. And I was like, hey, now that we're like, this is a bit too much and I don't want him to like be 21 one day and look back and be like, why'd you do that?
Yeah.
I was a teenager. I was going through puberty and that was an awful time for me. And I was like, okay, at some point, like, you know, I kind of had to take a step back. And then it was also challenging because like I had such an active role that I think it allowed my mother to kind of take a backseat in certain things. And so I would become frustrated with like, well, I'm getting us access to the doctors and to all of these treatments. And so I think she kind of, you know, like took a backseat. And so it felt like I was putting in a little more of the effort to the point where I was like, okay, I kind of need to step back and let her step back up to the plate. And also realize, and I also got to a point where I felt like I was starting to like parent her and it was hindering my relationship with my mother to the point where I was like, okay, like this is now a point where I need to start to have my own life and like allow her to be the mom to my brother. And that was really hard, was relinquishing that control and letting go.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you literally sound so wise beyond your years. Like I literally, I can't even imagine going through what you go through, but thank you so much for sharing all of that. Do you talk about it?
I haven't talked about it in a really long time.
Yeah.
Like even like in thinking back to a lot of that stuff, I was like, wow, I forgot it. I mean, my last book, which was the one about our lives, is back in 2014. So it's been five years. Yeah, it's been
Do you think that it's important for people to have something near and dear to their heart, to have something that's bigger than them to like help out with, like a cause or something?
Yes, that's when you're actually going to care and you're going to be willing to put in the grunt work. And it was interesting because there came a point where I had to shift out of autism, and then I was shifting into this world of like pop culture and lifestyle where, you know, I interview celebs and I, you know, pick their brains about sex and their dating life. And that's such a contrast.
Yeah.
And it was really hard for me to go from being an activist and running a foundation and helping families and like having that direct kind of activism. And then being like, this feels so selfish of me to walk away and then host a pop culture show after all of this. But at the same time, I was like, but look, at one of my other passions aside from helping people is like really making people laugh. And I've been doing stand-up since I was 18. And I've done like the Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory in Gotham in New York. You know, that was always kind of a passion. Pop culture I've always geeked out over.
Yeah.
And there's just like a deep appreciation. I'm like, look, you can have that balance.
You can have both. Wow, and what a great example for people.
Yeah, and like my passion shifted from, you know, helping people in that way to like, now I love to like make people laugh and help people learn new things in a way that's relatable and entertaining and fun. Yeah.
Agreed. I love that. I think it's so cool that you have so much more to you than like the housewives and the gossip and the fun dating stuff. Even though for me, that's so fun too.
Yeah.
And you also grew up in LA. What was that like?
Oh, girl, I grew up in the hood. It took me a long time.
You just sounded like Jeffree Star when you said that.
It took me a long time to even kind of embrace that. For the longest time, I felt like I was just trying so hard to get out that I didn't really own the fact that, like, I, you know, grew up right outside of downtown, but, like, in the not-so-nice part of downtown, like, where we grew up. Like, I mean, we live in downtown now, but, like, you didn't mess with downtown when I was growing up. Like, it was scary.
That's what people say. Like, people say it was, like, The Walking Dead. Like, no one came downtown.
No, you would avoid it like the plague if you could. But yeah, I grew up here.
Why? Was there just nothing here?
There was a lot of gang violence. There was a lot of homeless people. It was just unsafe. But yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles. I've always been in Los Angeles. I really had no desire to ever leave. But I lived in the heart of LA up until I was about 17. And then when I was 17, because I was also going to school out here, and I was in high school. And I, at that point, I was like, okay, I'm ready to really focus on my career. Because at that point, like, my first book had come out, my second book was coming out, and I told my mom, I was like, okay, I did this traditional high school thing, I'm done with it. I found an online homeschooling program. I'm gonna move in with my grandparents in West Covina. I've already talked to the principal, I already talked to the deans. Everybody thinks
a terrible idea. You're so like independent.
I was like, everybody thinks it's a terrible idea and they hate it, but I've already signed your signature on the paperwork and this is happening. And she's like, okay, I support you.
Wow. So do you think this all is like making sense to me, because like you take initiative and you make things happen that you want to happen? And I was about to ask you, because I saw that you have Nicole Lappin, is I saw that you have had her on your podcast, and I was like, oh my gosh, I've literally read her book.
Yeah.
Rich Bitch. And I was like, one of the first finance and also gaining value, like bettering myself, like learning books that I like decided to read just because I wanted to, not because I had to, or like school, like a professor or a teacher was telling me to. And I loved it. And I wanted to ask you, what advice would you give someone that, or like other podcasters, to get all these awesome, dope guests? I know there's a whole thing about like maintaining the relationship or starting it or initiating it or whatever, but what are some tips you would give someone to like meet high profile people and make it a normal thing, like maintain friendships, things like that?
It's funny. I remember when I was first doing the whole fundraising thing at like 15, 16, there was a park director. And I remember when I was trying to get them to donate the park for us to use for the event. And I kept calling her and she'd be like, okay, I have a meeting on Tuesday. So I'd call her at Tuesday at 10 a.m. And then eventually she told my mom, she's like, your son is just very persistent. And that's really what it is. It's about persistence. And it's really just about making the move. I think too many people overthink, like, how am I going to do it? And where am I going to do it? And it's really just reach out. Find the email on Instagram. If it's a celebrity, you can find their publicist contact on like IMDb Pro. Like, the information's out there. A lot of people have personal websites where they have management teams that you can contact, form submissions, or you can DM people on Instagram. I think it really just starts with taking the first step and being like, okay, I'm just going to put in a cold ask. And then if you don't hear back, maybe follow up, send a follow-up email.
Yeah.
I mean, there've been so many guests that I've had to follow up with. I mean, Lauren Everts from The Skinny Confidential, I had to follow up with them for months before, and they kept rescheduling.
Yeah.
And like, you know, they're just, you just have to be persistent and you have to be willing to just go out there and put yourself out there.
Is there a such thing as following up too much or reaching out too much?
I think you know that point. You know that point where the company's just like really not interested.
Like it's not happening.
You know it's not happening. And then maybe you try again like in 6 months or a year later when your platform has grown. Yeah. But like, look, I'll give you an example. When I first started No Filter, you know, people say there's no money in podcasting, but I got my first paid sponsorship deal right when the show started.
How'd you get your sponsorship?
Found the marketing director. So the first sponsor I ever had was Califia Farms.
Which is
the almond milk brand. And loved the almond milk brand.
Love them.
Did so much research online to find an email to the marketing director. And I just reached out to her. I put together this, you know, ghetto little pitch deck that was really just like a Word document. Got her on the phone with me. That's always kind of my strategy, is always do your best to get them on the phone. Because if you can get them for 10 minutes, then like you can make that sale.
Got it.
Versus an email or a pitch deck. Like it's
not as easy to say no.
Yeah, exactly. I remember after my first conversation with her, my pitch was for $400. Mm-hmm. And it was to, instead of the traditional 30-second ad read, I was like, what I want to do is do a drink of the week that's a cocktail that incorporates your products. And so they're, you know, cocktails that I'll design. I'll do all the photos and everything, and we'll make it the drink of the week of the show. I'll tag you guys in the description, whatever, whatever. It's $100 per episode, but you have to buy 4 episodes. And she's like, okay, sure, $400. And that was like my first deal.
Oh my gosh.
3 years later, come to adulting, same strategy, but in adulting, we had raised $20,000. Yeah.
Wow.
Launching adulting, using the same principles, but having a little more, you know, brazen to ask for a little more money. And at that point have a little bit more leverage.
So do you do all of your own deals?
Mm-hmm.
And for people that like don't have managers or teams or agents and stuff, what do you suggest as far as like, should you reach out to brands you only want to work with? How much should you be pitching yourself for? Things like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now we're also in a place where we're starting with Abrams, who's representing us for adult. And so they're helping with some of the deals, which at first I thought they were going to be a much bigger, not necessarily that they're not a support, but I realized that I'm still the type of person that like really likes to take the initiative. And like, I'm going to be my biggest advocate. So I'm constantly going out there and like pushing it. But I guess my advice would be you should always go with brands you already use and know.
Got it. So always. It's just natural.
Always. Like I have a friend, I won't say her name because she'll like bite my head off if I give it away, but she has a podcast and she's like, I went on, you know, Audible and I signed up for their, you know, percentage deal or affiliate deal. And I went on, you know, this delivery service. And I'm like, but do you use any of those things? And she's like, no, but all the other podcasts are doing it. I go, but like, you're not going to have the same passion behind it or the same testimonials or the same story. And people aren't going to feel that
same
love.
It's not going to be naturally integrated into the content.
Exactly. And even if it's like a brand that doesn't want to pay you up front, show them some love on social media. Show your followers that you are really interested in them. Eventually they'll take notice of that. And you can even use that to build a case study. Be like, look at on my Instagram stories.
Everyone knows I'm obsessed with it.
So it's the most organic fit.
Yeah.
My audience already knows that this is a thing. Like give us a discount code, whatever.
Got it.
And then when it comes to determining what your worth is, I was talking to a brand.
I don't have representation, but I do have a lot of friends in the industry that give me great advice. And even for me, like 2 days ago, this brand reached out to me and wanted to do an Instagram thing. And I was interested in the brand, very interested, knew the brand. I used the brand. I was like, perfect. And they're like, name your rate. And I'm like, oh God, like I have no idea what my rate is. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I've grown a little bit since my last deal. What do I say? And I like honestly just threw out a number that I thought was like, at first I was like gonna lowball it. And then I was like, you know what, Taylor? I don't even really care. Like I don't need this brand deal. Like I'm just gonna YOLO it, right? So I did it a little more than I typically do. And they literally no negotiation. They were like, yeah, that's perfect. I was like so shook. So I was like, how the heck do I know what to say and what not to say?
I think you have to really, I mean, because there's like the traditional advice that's like, know your worth. But then you have people out there that are like trying to make $30,000 deals off of like one Instagram post.
Yeah.
Like you have to calm down.
Yeah.
And I was having a conversation with the brand the other day where they're like, the rates are just so all over the market that like, we don't even understand what it is.
Yeah.
At this point. And so I think one thing you have to remember is that it is a very competitive market. You always want to make sure that your rates are competitive, but at the same time, you always want to make sure that you're providing some additional value or clout or something. So like with me, when it comes to brand deals, I never like to do a one-time podcast mention or a one-time Instagram post.
Got it.
I like to do a whole package. And so what I do is
that's really smart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I leverage email, I leverage Instagram, I leverage Facebook and Twitter because I think those are underutilized tools. I leverage the podcast. Like, I try to put everything together and put packages.
Got it.
And I like to break them up into four different tiers at four different price levels.
Got it.
And so the thought is it's taking the traditional marketing rule of seven, where like a consumer has to see something seven times before they're willing to actually make the purchase.
Yes.
Which I think is so true. And like, if you have one influencer that's like, I'm only going to do a 30-second ad read, you know, whatever, whatever. Like, it doesn't give them as yes. much of an ROI, and they want, you know, as much exposure for yes. what they're paying, you know?
Yeah.
So I like to just break them down into different tiers. And then what I do before I even pitch them the price points is I'll send them the initial deck, and then I'll try to get them on the phone. And then once I have them on the phone, I'm like, okay, what's your budget range for working with influencers or working in the podcasting world?
Got it.
What is your ballpark that you'd like to work within? And then I also ask them what their marketing objectives are and what they would consider an ROI to be from this partnership.
Wow.
That way they, one, know when I say marketing objectives and ROI, which were terms I had to learn, they think, oh, this is somebody that has their shit together.
They know what
you
they're
know?
Doing.
They know what they're talking
and
about.
And it's like, what the heck do you want to make money off of? Like, yeah. what do you want me to sell here?
Yeah. And then based off of what their objectives are and what they're looking for, and all of the deals have been so unique, but based off of their objectives and based off of their budget price points, I can then break things down.
Got
and
it.
Then one thing that I always like to remember too is like, go with the number that's going to make you feel accomplished or make you feel like you've won a victory and not like you're at your dire wit's end just to pay your rent. Go with something that's okay. a little more than what you need.
That makes because, you feel like, yes, I got yes, this deal.
Because, and always take it up maybe about 10% more.
Really?
Because if they say no,
you can come back
and be like, well, I'll give it to you at this discounted rate, or I'll give it to you for this price.
But
and then you
me,
still feel in that victorious range.
Okay, for me though, like, I know it's just an in my head thing, but like, what advice would you give even to me or like to people like me? I'm like, I feel crazy saying that rate, right?
Like, just do it. Just do it because you're
like, I just don't want them to think, oh my God, she's ridiculous for saying that.
You're going to do it and they're going to say no. I've been told a million times. So many brands that have told me no a million times only to then eventually say yes.
Okay.
You know?
So the worst that's going to happen is they say no.
The worst that can happen is they say no and you try again in 6 months.
Got it.
And when you come back in 6 months, make sure that you have proof that says my show has grown or this is changed. This
yeah.
is why I'm coming back to you is because there's been some type of evolution or growth.
Got it.
So even when I come back to brands that we've worked with every season of the show, I'm like, this is what's different about this upcoming season. This is how much the show has grown. This is where I think you're going to see the
Completely.
Most value. And
wow.
like, look, and I like to get really creative with the different packages. Some brands want just like the brand awareness. So you make sure you do Instagram posts and you give them a lot of love. And then I remember there was one company that really wanted influencer engagement. And I knew we had access to a lot of different people in the community uh-huh. in their space or in their category. And I was like, look, we'll bring your product. We'll have it available in studio. We'll give the guests free product. And then if they like it, I'm happy to help foster that connection so you can build upon that relationship.
Yeah.
And so that was a really big thing that the brand was interested in. And then, you know, they ended up making really great connections with people.
That's amazing.
In their
so
space.
You kind of were the connect for them.
Yeah. Which normally, you know, they can cold ask the influencer's team, but like there's no guarantee that anything's going to happen.
And also it's more,
it feels
organic.
More organic.
Yeah. It's more organic when you're like, wait, what? Like even when you give me the blondie, I'm like, wait, I actually love this drink.
Yeah.
Like I want to do a deal. Like I want to drink it.
Yeah.
I want to do a deal with them. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So that's actually really great
so much
advice.
More natural.
Like for me, it's weird because I'm so immersed in this influencer world and I work for one and stuff, but it's like, I have no idea about the deals and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that's all manager and agent stuff.
But the reality is, and I'll tell you, nobody knows what they're doing.
Okay.
Nobody knows.
That makes me feel good.
Not even the managers. I'm realizing, because like, I'm like, this is my strategy and this is how I would approach it. And they have a very different approach. And, you know, way about going about certain things. And I kind of like to push a
yeah.
little bit. And I'm like, but I think this will give us more value, or this will, you know, make a little more money or be a little more beneficial for the brands or for everyone involved. And, you know, the reality is it's such a unique time that like everybody's trying to figure it out. Brands are trying to figure it out. Agents are trying to figure it out. And nobody has that system down, that as long as you walk into the room acting confident, like you have it,
like, you know,
they're going to trust you more as the authority. Cause look at, if there are two influencers and they both come into the pitch room and one of them's confident and like, I'm going to give you an ROI at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And another one comes in and is like, I don't know. What do you mean?
Yeah.
They're going to be like, I'm going to go with the one that's confident.
Yeah.
Even if she doesn't know what she's doing,
yeah.
she's making
she's
it all
confident.
Up.
happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Got you. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. Let's get into the polls.
Let's get into the polls. We had some fun polls.
Yeah, we do. Okay. So would you, this is like so like hard hitting, like the first poll. Would you ever have sex with a porn star?
Yeah.
Okay, so to explain the story you told me.
Okay, so
I'm like, hey Zach, so I do polls on my podcast. Like, do you have any like juicy dating ones? This is his first suggestion.
So I'm like, well, actually I have a really unique story. I was like, I accidentally ended up having or trying to have sex with a retired porn star. And it was really where we'd met on an app, we'd been talking for a while, and I was like, why don't you come
what
over?
App?
I think it was Tinder.
Okay.
And I was like, why don't you come over and, you know, we'll have drinks. And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll come over. He'd lived, you know, locally and he wasn't too far. So he comes over and then he shows up at my door with a Spectrum tote bag.
Okay.
I was like, why do you have a tote bag? I'm like, what are you,
yeah,
are you spending the night? Like, what are you, I didn't invite you to spend the night. I invited you for a drink. And then he's like, oh no, it's my laptop. I brought my laptop with me. And I was like, why did you bring your laptop?
Uh-huh.
I was like, do you have work to do? And he's just like, no, I just thought, you know, we could watch porn. And I was like, well,
first,
I was like, first of all, I'm offended that you don't think I have my own laptop and
computer
or television to watch porn on. And then I was like, okay, this is strange. I'm like, well, whatever. And so I'm like, okay.
He brings his own laptop
to watch porn. I was like, we were having a drink. Like, what is happening?
Were you like so taken back? Were you like,
I was really taken. Nobody's ever showed up to my house with a laptop to watch porn before.
Also, like, when he said that, like, what did you do?
I was like trying to be funny and trying to make a joke of it. And I was like, oh, haha. I was like, well, would you ever do porn? And then he's like, actually, I did. I've done porn in the past. And I was like, what do you, you've like, you're a porn star. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, can I watch? He's like, what kind of porn do you want to watch? I was like, can we watch your porn? And I didn't expect him to say yes. And he was like, yeah, sure. And so he's putting on his porn and watching it. It was the most cringeworthy.
At this point, were you just like playing along with this for like entertainment purposes? Or
yes. And
or were you actually into him?
Both. It was 60% for entertainment and 40% because there was a chance that I would have sex with him.
I feel like if someone said that to me, I would be like, please leave right now.
No, I was like fully, I was like, if I'm in this, then I'm going to go all the way. And then so eventually, like, you know, we started making out and then, you know, we tried to have sex, but he couldn't get it up because probably because he watches so much damn porn, but he couldn't get it up because, oh, he said his neighbor had just died yesterday. His neighbor was murdered.
What?
And I was like, whoa, this is just getting crazier and crazier.
Oh God, this is literally sounds like a movie.
It felt like a movie.
Like, and the craziest
it was
movie.
Funny because I was also like texting my friend Katie and sending her like Instagram stories of everything that was going on. So she was like dying because she was living it in real life. But yeah, he's like, there's just been a lot of stress on my mind and all of this stuff. And he's like, but you know what? What I can do is I have a dealer and my dealer can get me Viagra, but it'll take him about 45 minutes.
What? So what'd you do? Were you like, please leave?
And at that point, I was like, yeah, you gotta go. I was like, I'm not gonna wait because at that point, it was like 11. And I was like, I'm not gonna wait 45 minutes for you to get a pill and then take your pill. And then I was like, no, at this point, we're done. Like, I'm sorry, homie, swipe left. Like, this is done. Like, I've had enough. Like, I've had to deal, nurse you through your murdered neighbor, which I don't know how true that story was. And watch
I literally,
your
my
porn.
Jaw is like, dropped. Like, what?
Yeah. But I mean, if he got it up, there was a good, like, 70% chance we probably would have had sex.
Okay. So 14% said yes, they would.
Only 14?
86% said no.
I mean, I guess porn stars aren't really... Well, and this is the reason I
mostly
don't watch
girls
porn.
Are saying yes too.
Well, yeah, because you got the guys in porn like have, you know, a giant penis and they just look like they know what they're doing, but that's not really the case.
Okay, a few of my guy friends are saying yes. I'm very
naturally
uncomfortable. It's weird when I like see
people you know.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
I actually went on a date recently with a guy that used to be a porn producer.
Okay.
And he used to, I guess, like, I don't know, direct porn. I don't know what he did exactly. He had a production company that he was telling me about. And he was just saying that, like, it's not what people expect it to be. Like, it's really rehearsed and, like...
I've heard it's very,
a 10-minute video takes, like, 6 hours to shoot and you have to reshoot and it's, like, it's exhausting.
I've heard it's very a real production. Like, it's very, like, you're on set, you're an actor. It's not, like...
It's not like what people would expect.
Yeah, and it's, like, weird because there's all these camera people. It's just, like, very, like, a real production. And, it's, you know, I mean, same with, like, I have worked for big studios and stuff before. And, like, when they film, like, sex scenes or, like, even makeout scenes, like, it's so weird because, it's like, literally there's a camera
awkward.
Right in your face. Like camera guys everywhere.
Yeah.
Or girls. And it's just, like, it's so strange.
Yeah. And, like, I don't like to watch porn only because... I'm so weird. When I watch it, I'm always just thinking about like, where did this person, like what happened in their life to the point where they felt like,
yeah, you're thinking deep into
it. Did they think that it was going to be a fun process and now they're hating it? Or do they have like daddy issues that they're trying to work out? Like, I'm always like overanalyzing the situation.
Yeah. I'm not into the whole thing, but I find it very fascinating, especially the whole production side of it, just because like I'm a production nerd. Anyway, would you ever do porn? That's your next question.
I don't think I would ever do porn.
No. I definitely would never.
I don't think I would ever.
I would never bang a porn star.
Why?
It doesn't sound appealing to me. Anyway, 7% said they said yes.
They would do porn? Really? Yeah. Wow, these results are surprising.
Why? What did you think?
Well, I mean, no, I guess that's pretty standard. I wouldn't expect most people to do porn. I would do porn.
I'm honestly shocked. I'm interested too, because we just posted these and like already a couple thousand have voted, but I'm interested to see tomorrow what the actual results are like after 24 hours. Should you talk about kids and marriage on a first date?
Yes. I always do.
Why?
Because I feel like, look, I'm all about the efficiency. Like, I need to know if your plans are to, you know, be a photographer in Ohio in 5 years and like swipe left. Like, it's not going to work out. I'm not moving to Ohio so you can pursue your dreams of like shooting photography of potatoes. What do they have in Ohio? I know. Sorry. I'll probably get shit for that. But yeah, I need to know up front if this is going anywhere.
Got it.
Like,
so what are your thoughts? Do you want to get married? Do you want to have kids?
I'm open to marriage. I don't want to have a wedding. I definitely want to have children. And I've already made up my mind that like, if I'm in my early to mid 30s and I don't have any real potentials, like I'll have a family on my own.
Love that. I feel like that's a very LA thing.
Yeah.
But people don't really get married until after like 30.
Yeah.
Anyway, like 30 is the new 20. I would say definitely, well, not definitely, but no, I wouldn't talk about kids or marriage.
You think you have to wait?
I think wait to talk about it.
Why?
Because here's the thing. I feel like as the girl, if I brought that up, the guy would be like, oh my God, this girl's psychotic.
Crazy, yeah.
This girl's crazy, blah, blah, blah. Because girls are like, apparently to all guys were quote crazy, right? So like, I would just expect guys immediately to be like, oh my God, this girl's so crazy. I would never.
I mean, but I also do it in a way that's kind of like cheeky and like joking.
Yeah.
But like, well, how also do you, kind how of do you picks say their it? Brain. I don't know. I do it very like bluntly to the point where it kind of catches them off guard, but it's not like aggressive in a way that's like, I'm trying to get married. Like, I don't know.
But would you actually recommend girls to say that? Because like, I wouldn't recommend my friend do that. My girlfriend.
I mean, there's something to be said that the fact that I'm still single. There's something to be said about that. Like, I'm not saying that this tactic works, but I do think you should add, it's important to, maybe not on the first
maybe
date,
you
maybe
just
I'm a little
know
too aggressive,
intentions.
But I think it's important to get those things out of the way right away, especially because like now I'm at the point where it's like, I'm not 19 and dating just for love and believing that love's going to win at the
end
of the day.
You don't want to waste time.
No. And like, I'm also at the point where like, I'm dating for compatibility and, you know, trying to be practical about it and trying to be like, I want to start a family and that's something that's important to me.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it's important to whatever your values and whatever is important to you in a relationship, it's important to know those answers sooner rather than later.
I understand the intention behind it for sure. Only 13% said yes, you should talk about kids and marriage on the first date.
Interesting.
A lot of girls are saying it. Okay, next one. When should you first have sex with someone? First three dates, like within the first three dates or after three dates?
My rule used to be after the first three dates, just because I'm like, we really need to build interest and whatever. And now I'm just at the point, again, back to the efficiency. Like, I'm just like,
you're just not wasting time.
We need to get this out right away so I can see if this is worth the investment.
No, like, I definitely respect that, but I'm definitely voting after three dates.
You know what I do, though, is I like to go speed dating.
Okay, you talked about this in the podcast I was listening to you on. What the heck does that mean?
So it's basic. I mean, it's like what you would imagine. It's like you're going on 20 different dates and it's with 20 different guys and all of the dates are like 6 minutes long.
Wait, how does this, is this like a group activity?
Mm-hmm. You can buy tickets to it. I've done it 4 times now. And you go to a bar, everybody's there. You actually speed date.
Oh my gosh. And do they have this for everyone? Like anyone can do it?
They have it for guys and girls, girls and girls, and guys and guys.
Wow. That's crazy.
I've done it 4 times now. But I mean,
what if you talk to someone for 6 minutes and you're like, oh my God, I think this is my person.
Okay. So you also have a scorecard where you keep track. Yeah. You have a scorecard where you write their names down and like how you would rank them. And then at the end of the night, you pick your top 5. You turn in your scorecard with your top 5 to the organizer.
Yeah.
And then if you both have listed each other in your top 5, they match you and connect you the next morning.
Connect you like with numbers or something?
Yeah.
Oh, what? That is insane. And how do you sign up?
They have them on Eventbrite. Okay. I just Googled it one day and I found it.
And like, how much is it? Like, how much is a ticket?
I think it's like $25.
Oh my God. That is so cool. Yeah. See, I feel like my podcast should like host something like that.
I've been wanting to do something like that.
Literally.
Yeah.
Especially because I feel like for me and my friends, I don't know if you like know through my Instagram, but I always talk about guys that I call 307s.
Okay.
Basically, it's like there's no cool, straight, chill guys, I feel like, in LA. Mm. Like that I have yet to meet. There's like all these like model actor, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Like I'm not into that. Yeah. Like I just want a guy's guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or a guy that like literally is in finance. You know what I mean? Like
You need a guy that grew up in LA.
Really?
Yeah.
You think?
Like, I feel like I know a lot of those types of guys, but it's because I grew up with them, you know? But like people that I've met through work or in the industry, like they're not those types
of guys. But also I'm like, I'm not in the financial district. Yeah. So it's like, I guess I need to meet them
And most of the guys that grew up in LA are not trying to pursue a career in entertainment.
Got it. That's really interesting.
Like a finance job. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I would say after 3 dates, and so did 85% of the people.
Interesting.
Should you go on dates with people you don't think you'll like?
I mean, I'm not a big fan of that, but so here's one thing that I actually learned through speed dating is when you're meeting these guys, I would, off of my first impression of just seeing them, I would be like, swipe left. If I saw them on a dating app, I would not have had a conversation. But when you see them in person, when you experience them in person, when you have a conversation with them in person, like it's just such a different.
It's so different.
It's just way different. And I have changed my mind about, you know, some guys.
Yeah.
You know, based off of meeting them in person. I think you should always give somebody the benefit of the doubt. And I, based off of all the dating experts I've had on my shows, they all say like, it's good to go out with people that you maybe not necessarily are attracted to, or if they express interest, it's good to kind of, you know, give them a shot because maybe it's a bad date and it's a great story, or you at least get to kind of build your dating muscle.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Build your dating muscle. Mm-hmm.
Like going to the gym.
Oh my God. See, I feel like I need to do that. I would say, as much as I don't want to say yes, I think yes, you should.
You'd say yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Like I don't, like for me, like I don't listen to myself. Like when someone shows interest in me, I'm like, it's weird. Like when someone shows interest in me, I'm like, wait, but I don't like you. Like it's like, like, I don't know if it's a girl thing, but like homegirl over here, like loves like the chase or like loves the, like
a lot of us love the chase. And then a lot of us and
loves the idea of like winning someone over, like whatever.
But not only that, it's a lot deeper rooted. I had Dr. V, who's a therapist on the Adulting Podcast recently. And she was saying that people, when they engage in that behavior regularly, it's because they don't necessarily feel like they deserve love, or they're not ready to be in a relationship, and they think that they are, but they're not really.
Wow.
They're not really ready. And so they're self-sabotaging.
No, you're probably very right. Okay. Yeah. But I think, yeah, you should. And I should too. 52% said yes.
Mmm. That's good.
So I feel like this is like exactly what I'm thinking in my head. Like, yeah, I probably should, but 48% of me doesn't want to.
Probably because most of them are in relationships and realize that they probably would have never guessed.
Well, I mean, definitely people that I've like developed a crush for or like have even dated, I was not initially into.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like definitely, it's like a deeper level thing. Is it embarrassing to admit you've met your significant other on a dating app?
Oh, I kind of feel like, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's becoming more normalized. It depends on the dating app. Like, you don't want to be on, like, a sleazy dating app.
Like, what, like, or what would you consider sleazy?
I guess for, like, a gay guy, Grindr.
Yeah.
Or, like, a Scruff. I've never really been on, like, a Scruff. Or, like, they have, like, other ones. Like, I think Squirt is, I don't know. They have, like, really gross names. But, like, you don't want to be, like, I met my boyfriend on Squirt.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a real app. I hope that's, it's probably, I don't think that's a real
app. Like, for me personally, I don't think it's embarrassing at all to say you're met on a dating app.
Like, if I met you on Bumble, then I'm like, okay. Like, I wouldn't be, like, you know.
Especially, I don't know about you, but, like, all myself and, like, all my friends use Hinge.
Yeah.
And I feel like literally I've met so many, like, of my friends have met, like, their actual person they're going to marry through Hinge. So yeah. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
At least in LA, it's so normalized. Like, back home where I'm from, it's, like, more like, oh, my God, you didn't meet on a picnic? Like, what?
But like, because that's the norm.
Yeah.
There.
But like, for here, it's so normal to be on an app. We don't have time.
Yeah. Nobody's going on picnics here.
Yeah. 74% said no. It's not embarrassing.
It's becoming more normalized.
Which I feel like that's great. Like, literally, if I would have done this, like, a year ago, I feel like it would have been way different percentage. Should you split the bill on a first date?
Yes.
What about, would you tell me that I should split the bill on a first date?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because you're saying for guys, right?
Well,
with guy,
I think,
and a guy.
I think.
I'm saying for a girl and a guy.
Yeah. It's interesting, and I probably might get shit for saying this as well, but at this point, I'm used to it. I think it's interesting because we're in an era where there are a lot of women that, like, really are like, I want to be equal to a man. I want to be, you know, I want to be on the same playing ground. But I think that kind of blurs the lines for a lot of straight men that I've talked to. Not to say that this is an excuse for them.
No,
to
I agree.
Hit,
I
but
agree.
Like, I think it blurs the lines for them where they don't know if it's appropriate to pay for the first date. They don't know if it's appropriate to open the
door.
They
don't want to offend.
They don't want to offend you because people are being offended by, you know, not all, but some people are offended if you open the door because they think that that's a sign that they're not self-sufficient or they're not
independent. See, I'm a sucker for, like, the traditional dating. Like, I love when a guy opens the door.
But
I love it when they pay.
The lines are so blurred right now that, like, we're in a time where we're relearning what the new norm is.
Got it.
You know? And so I think, I don't know. Do I think a man should pay for a woman on a date? I think it's the traditional courteous thing to do to offer.
Okay, do you think the girl should be like, no, I got it, or be like, no, we can split?
See, it's interesting because I still feel like I like the traditional, like, the guy should pay and not allow the girl to pay. Like, I just like that tradition.
Yeah, but do you think the girl should still offer?
I think it's nice to offer, only because I know I've been in situations with, like, friends and stuff where, like, I'll offer, and if they don't play the, oh, let me get my wallet, let me pretend, then I'm kind of like, oh, then you're just expecting
me
to pay.
See, I always offer, just because I feel like, even if I want you to pay, I'm still going to grab my wallet and act like I'm going to.
Yeah, I still do the whole fake, let me get my wallet.
Yeah.
And I'm fully prepared to pay if I need to, because I'm throwing that card out there. But yeah, I think it's a little offensive to me when people assume that because I make more money, that I'm responsible to pay.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. 53% said no, you should not split the bill. 47% said yes.
Interesting. So more people.
And most of my followers are girls. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, but I also think that, like, we've set a precedent of, like, the man should pay for the date. Okay, so here's where I think the other rule is, like, I think the person that asked the other person out should be the one to
initiate. I agree.
If you ask that person
no matter what the relationship is, I agree. Okay, if it's obvious that one person makes way more money than the other on a date, are they expected to pay? The person with
more
money.
I don't think they should be, no.
No, I don't think they. I think it goes back to the who asked who on the date. 82% said no. So glad people are not idiots.
Because I've just been in so many situations. I remember one time I had a group of friends on my show and we went out to eat because I always used to take my guests out to eat because we would do, like, evening tapings and we would go out to eat after we taped the show. And it was like a birthday episode that I had taped. And so I had a couple of friends on. And so then afterwards we went to dinner. And so I'm expecting, since this is a larger party, like, and we'll split it a couple different ways. But then there was, like, an expectation for me to cover the bill. And I was like, one, it's my birthday. And two, like, the fact that you guys are just expecting me to cover the tab
I do
was
not
a little
think that's
like,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That rubbed me the wrong way.
Oh my gosh, I do not
when
like
people
that.
Do that, it's just, eh. Like, if you assume somebody makes more money, they still let them offer.
Yeah. And also, it just has nothing to do with, if someone makes more money than you, it has nothing to do with you expecting.
Yeah.
Like, you should never expect that from them. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's my personal opinion.
Agreed.
But I hope you had fun on the pod.
So much fun.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having, we talked about everything from like autism and hustle
I
to
know.
Like,
I wanted to get through everything.
No, but I loved
everything.
I loved it because I think oftentimes you get to see only one side of a person and you don't get to see the duality.
I know. I think it helped because I honestly, you have so much to you that I like literally had to write out like exactly what I wanted to talk about. Please pimp yourself out and tell people where to follow you and find you and stuff.
Yeah. My handle is Just Plain Zach, which is my website. Everything is Just Plain Zach all over the internet. And then I have two shows, hashtag No Filter with Zach Peter. We do pop culture breakdowns on Mondays and celebrity interviews on Wednesdays. And then hashtag Adulting comes out on Tuesdays.
Awesome. Yeah. Be sure to listen to our episode on hashtag No Filter.
Yes.
It was so fun. So juicy. He even asked me some poll questions, which is super fun. And also be sure to follow me on Instagram at TK's Juicy Polls. Following me on Instagram, you can vote in the polls and participate in the podcast. So that's what this is all about. So make sure you do that. Leave a review and a rating on both of our podcasts. Go gas us up. And
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.